welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report, closing out the week strong, as we always do, with Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
Yeah, I've been better.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I have been better, but also, you know what? You know what makes me better?
What?
The people watching this show, John.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks,
they're okay.
Who give me they're attention, okay. Which I much like chlorophyll changes sunlight into ATP, John.
I take your attention
and chemically alter it into energy. So please look at me. Read my book, Brett Ehrlich. Please
look at me. You Tales gotta write of that minor book league now.
Cable sensation. Oh, I've touted that book for a decade, John.
No, Tales of a Minor League Clout Chaser. You gotta write that, man. Oh,
minor league cable sensation.
There you go. So we and commercial star. So we're learning a lot today about chlorophyll. I'm also learning that I decided, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm in this big studio. We got all this awesome equipment. Why am I using cheap headphones when I could plug in one of our awesome IFBs? And I'm quickly realizing the sound quality is not nearly as good. So now I regret this decision, but we're gonna go with it because we don't have a lot of time. If you are joining us now, you definitely couldn't have heard our conversation before the show because our mics were cut off. But we were talking about how Brett and I both think it's time for Rounders 2. And it made me think, I don't know if anyone would find this interesting at all, but I would be interested to see a compilation of the like pop culture things that spurred a lot of interest in something, like how Rounders made Texas Hold'em like the only way you play poker, like how Karate Kid led to the explosion of karate in America. I wonder what other things there are like that. Brett, you should do a roundup for CBS.
I want to do, you earlier said a mashup kind of Cobra Kai and Rounders, and you know what the title would be?
What?
Hit Me.
it's not Blackjack though. Okay, oh, we're gonna work
God.
On.
Just,
we're gonna
work they on. Only play one game. I love watching. They have like poker games on that you can watch on TV, and they're wildly entertaining because people are keeping secrets from each other. They try to do that occasionally with blackjack, and you're just like, we might as well play Russian roulette to see who's the luckiest.
Like, I mean, that would be more exciting. And the way America's going, it's probably about a year or two off. It'll probably be on FXX, if I had to guess. Anyway, Brett, thank you for joining us. You know why we need you here? For everything that you just did, but also because we cannot do our Garbage People of the Week without you. So we are gonna be closing out the show with that, so stick around. I've got mine. I have no idea who Brett's is, and the TDR community, the Dragon Squad, has chosen their Garbage Person of the Week as well. So we will. I just saw a super chat from Jesse the Vegan Miner that says chlorophyll, more like borophyll. Brett, you gotta up your science.
Borophyll doesn't exist, you idiot.
Okay, we'll tell it to Jesse the vegan miner.
Who's the scientesian now?
Oh my God. Okay. So here's what's going on. We're gonna be talking about a variety of stories, including a potentially foiled, potential copycat of what happened in Kenosha about a week ago. We're gonna have that for you. We've got our garbage people. We're gonna be reflecting a little bit on the pandemic and where we think things go from here, just briefly. But we are, of course, going to be talking about the losers and the suckers and all of that. But if you're here already and you're watching, please hit the like button, share the stream, let people know that this whole thing is going on. I don't know what the YouTube algorithms need, but this is what we've got. So let's start clicking things until it loves us again. And if you send in comments, tweets, chats, super chats, all of that stuff, we'll be responding to those as we go along. But with that, we do have a lot to get to. So Brett, why don't we jump right in? Okay, someone mentioned happy half hour in the super chat. Who's on happy half hour this week?
Michael Elizabethan Shore. I don't know if his middle name's Elizabethan, but
something like that.
He is fancy.
Yeah.
Michael Shore will be on the show, and next week Judah Friedlander. So let's just deal with that.
That should
be
awesome.
Let's just let it soak in.
I hear he's still the champ, so that's awesome.
I want to see if he's still standing for president.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. But with that, let's jump into the news. Okay. We got a lot to deal with here. Back in 2018, Donald Trump was supposed to go on a trip to the Ain Marne American Cemetery near Paris. Now he didn't end up going, and they said at the time the reason was is that there was bad weather, which stopped their helicopter from going to the site. Now that never was a perfect explanation, since multiple other world leaders took a car convoy out there. Presumably he could have done that. But anyway, that story has a few other holes in it now, thanks to reporting by The Atlantic just yesterday, describing some of what Donald Trump had to say about the American soldiers, the vets who had lost their lives back in World War I, that he apparently didn't think was worth his time, saying in a conversation with senior staff members on the morning of the scheduled visit, "Why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers." In a separate conversation on the same trip, he referred to the more than 1,800 Marines who lost their lives at Belleau Woods as suckers for getting killed. Now there is a lot more to this. We're gonna be going over not just the most recent comments about American vets and our venerated war heroes that he's had to say. We have a lot that we're gonna get to. Brett, when you first saw this story, The Atlantic News came out, did you suspect that it might matter?
That it might matter? Yes, it does matter. That's
I think it's from Rounders.
It does anyway. I do believe I'll figure it out by the end of the day. Yeah, this absolutely matters. Donald Trump, what it exposes is the vast swath of military who now proven rightfully think Donald Trump is terrible. And a lot of Donald Trump supporters just assume that the military loves Trump because he's kind of a bellicose type person. But in truth, he is a jerkball, and he thinks this way not only about the fallen soldiers who gave their lives for freedom and this country, but he doesn't care about his own supporters who just buy all the crap he's hawking hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, and look, some of this stuff is, it's something, but, and we're gonna go through past stuff he said. It is not inconsistent with the way he talks about soldiers and vets in particular, but certainly just the way he talks about the world. So we'll get to all of that. Let's give you a little bit more of what came out in The Atlantic's reporting. So bit of context on the site that he was going to visit. America and its allies stopped the German advance towards Paris there back in the spring of 1918. But Trump on the same trip asked aides, who were the good guys in this war? He also said that he didn't understand why the United States would intervene on the side of the allies. Now, I understand this is World War I, different context than other wars, but I love the idea that he has to have very carefully explained to him. Like, he knows so little about particular conflicts that he has no idea why our interests would align with different countries, why we would support them. But this is the transactional way that he looks at the world. He doesn't know anything. There are so many lessons from 1918 in particular that he could have learned hypothetically that he apparently has not, Brett.
Well, he hates communists. I don't know. He should know this by now. He should, this is something that the person who is the commander in chief of the military should have some kind of knowledge of. That's the problem. Like, he should have done his homework 3 years in and find out generally what, as the commander in chief, some kind of history. I saw a tweet that was like this and about other things. It's like, how can he fail history so badly while it's repeating itself? That's like failing an open book test. That was an amazing tweet, and that's what he does. And it reminds me of this sketch from Mitchell and Webb. I don't know if people know them. They do the show Peep Show, but they're a sketch duo originally from England. And they have this one sketch where it's takes place on a battlefield, and there are guys in uniforms, and they're in a trench kind of, more of like a camp, like an entrenched camp planning the fight. And the other one goes over and says, I've got a question. Are we the baddies? The other one's like, what do you mean, are we the baddies? Like, we've got skulls on our uniform. Skulls. I just don't. Lightning bolts and skulls. Are we the baddies? And that's how I feel in these situations. Like, he's turning us into the bad guys. And when he looks back on, like, he very obviously absorbs everything that he knows about the world from pop culture. Even with that limited knowledge, he should know that what he's doing is making us the bad guys. Especially, like, why would you stop Germans?
I know. I Wouldn't you love to hear him opine a bit on World War II? Oh, that just would be
let
something.
It go. Let the microphone roll.
Yeah, just
but we
just
do, but we do. All
it's
the time.
Like drunk. It's Trump history. Let's have that show. Trump history. I know he doesn't drink apparently, but he's on something.
Trump anyway. History. That's really great, John. I'll write that.
You should totally. That would be good. Trump saying that 1,800 Marines who gave their lives in like we love to talk about why we engage in the wars we do now, but at least some of these past wars, some of it seemed accurate. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds died, and he thinks they're suckers and they're losers. But it even gets more specific and personal than that. So according to sources with knowledge of a visit, this is a different visit, but this is him standing at the grave of Robert Kelly. So this is a soldier who died in Afghanistan. He turned directly to his father, John Kelly, and said, "I don't get it. What was in it for them?" Kelly, who declined to on the brief, understandably, initially believed, people close to him said, that Trump was making a ham-handed reference to the selflessness of America's all-volunteer force, like they're doing it even though there's nothing in it for them. But later he came to realize that Trump simply does not understand non-transactional life choices. And that is so obviously true that we're gonna have a debate about whether any of this is accurate or whatever, but whether it is or not, that is 100% true. Everything is transactional. His interactions with his family are transactional. So the idea that someone would actually give their life to protect another individual or another country, it fundamentally makes no sense to him. He simply does not, he doesn't have the capacity to understand those sorts of worldviews, those sorts of emotions. He just doesn't have it in him.
Right, because, and this is why I don't understand why religious people like Trump, right? Because religious people, the main like existential concept of that is that there's something bigger than you, right? There's something bigger than you. And for Trump, there's nothing bigger than him in his mind. The idea that there are causes outside of Trump that anyone could believe in, that Trump himself would believe in what America stands for outside of him. And we need that ability, even if you are largely transactional in nature, and that is appealing. I'm gonna say that's appealing to a lot of his supporters, that he won't just pay in, you know, I'm not saying that I support this, but they're saying, why are we paying into NATO if we're not getting anything in return? Why are we paying into the World Bank or whatever, world banking systems or anything like that if we're not getting anything in return? A, we are getting things in return, but at the very least, Trump isn't even thinking about what America gets in return. He's only thinking about what he gets in return in terms of support, which is kind of tangentially related to democracy as a concept, but like he wants people to reelect him and he wants fame and glory. And as he said, like we'll keep the oil. He wants like plunder to contribute to his own personal wealth. And that is the breakdown that is among the 10 most troubling things about this story.
Yeah, and look, if there's someone out there that's watching this and thinks, okay, so he said some things, what do I care? This is abstract, transactional this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but understand that this has a direct effect on virtually everything he does as president. When a hurricane hits and it hits a place like Puerto Rico that he doesn't care about, he doesn't feel any obligation, any sort of like, I'm the president of all of America, so I need to protect them. That's not how he thinks about the world. The blue states that didn't vote for him, how many times has he implied that they don't deserve and shouldn't have the resources of the federal government, even during crises? This has an effect on how he views the relationship between him as president and the country, obviously. Now, to give you a little bit more information, and this is where it gets into weird stuff. Several observers told me, this is Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, that Trump is deeply anxious about dying or being disfigured, and this worry manifests itself as disgust for those who have suffered. In 2018 White House planning meeting for such an event, this is a military parade that he always wants to have. Remember, he wants tanks and everything. Trump asked his staff not to include wounded veterans on grounds that spectators would feel uncomfortable in the presence of amputees. Quote, nobody wants to see that, he said. And as always, nobody or everybody means him. Like he doesn't want to see it because he's terrified of this. He doesn't want to see people who've been wounded. You would think that that would lead him to, for instance, safeguard his life by wearing a mask and not encourage the spread of a virus that'll kill tens of thousands. he'd see less wounded in that case, but he's found a way to square that circle. But anyway, this is apparently a big thing that bothers him. They go on to say he seems to genuinely not understand why Americans treat former prisoners of war with respect. He doesn't understand why pilots who are shot down are honored by the military. All of this, all of the giving of yourself for something larger than yourself, he can't understand. He says specifically, well, we got more that we'll get to at some point. The thing about this
crazy is that he relies on that. He relies on others to make sacrifices for something larger than themselves. He just thinks that it's him. That thing that's larger.
And he thinks that's worth it. Yeah, I guess.
And someone who's never put himself in that position, so how would he even know? Like, he keeps himself so far from consequence always. And it's a system built to keep people like him safe. Like, as we're evicting thousands and thousands of people who can't pay their rent, every time he's, you know, people who've essentially gone bankrupt, every time he's gone bankrupt, he's like, oh, there's special laws for me, I'll be fine.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, 100%. And you know, we're not gonna play, he gave a speech yesterday. We're not playing his thing about, he goes off for 2 minutes about the mini strokes and how they said he had mini strokes when they did, they didn't, he did.
Like, he's just talking about himself having mini strokes. Yeah, it sounds like he had.
He said, I don't know what they are. I'm not a doctor. Yes, I've watched a lot of House. I'm not a doctor, but I know what a stroke is. I know what a mini version of it would be. And he's the one that said it. So again, doesn't matter that he had mini strokes, but he definitely had mini strokes. But anyway, Ellie Mistel, who's been on the show recently, said, "Real Donald Trump's campaign has been the president did not suffer from a series of mini strokes and has at no point disparaged dead soldiers or John McCain in the way we all saw him disparage John McCain on camera. Real strong post-convention pivot there," he tweeted, which is, that's been the week since the RNC was making everyone suspicious that he's had a series of strokes and attacking soldiers.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump doesn't want you to believe that The Atlantic's reporting that he called our former war heroes from World War I who had died in service losers and suckers. So here he is responding to the reporting yesterday.
"False, General Keith Kellogg, who was a highly respected man, couldn't believe when he heard it. And he knows everything about all of it. And to think that I would make statements negative to our military and our fallen heroes when nobody's done what I've done with the budgets, with the military budgets, with getting pay raises for our military. It is a disgraceful situation."
Okay, so he says it didn't happen because he did something with a budget or whatever. And some general knows everything about all of it. So yeah, so why are we still talking about this? I'm convinced it clearly didn't happen, Brett.
Well, yeah, he raises military budgets, fine. That money goes to contractors. They floated the idea of cutting health benefits to troops, so no. Also, you're on record disparaging people who have made ultimate sacrifices while you yourself have sacrificed nothing and pretend to be Saint Sebastian with arrows in your body, being completely pummeled with unfair words. Like, while sticks and stones may break his bones, words are worse.
Obviously.
That's him. He feels like he's a wounded soldier. He acts like it all the time. He's such a weak little bitch boy.
Okay, let's be careful.
And that's it. But yeah.
It is. It is. Okay, so look, he denied it, but not just him. Kayleigh McEnany tweeted, "I see President Real Donald Trump consistently express his heartfelt gratitude and absolute admiration for our brave men and women in uniform. Just yesterday, he was truly humbled to be in the presence of our courageous World War II veterans. This Atlantic story is garbage." Nobody believes. I don't think Trump fans believe that he was humbled in the presence of those veterans. He doesn't have the capacity to be humbled except by his own perception of himself, maybe briefly. Anyway, so look, he says it didn't happen. She said it didn't happen. They've also said that Scavino and Stephen Miller, who were on that trip in 2018, said it didn't happen. I don't know who either of those is supposed to convince. So the Atlantic, if Stephen Miller also says it didn't happen.
Kayleigh McEnany, who is on record calling Trump a hateful racist.
Yeah.
She has said that. Kayleigh McEnany has already changed her name to Toby, essentially, and become freaking Donald Trump's like willing servant, Sauron's willing servant, like doing everything, giving up any shred of dignity she might have for a title. She, before he was, and I wonder if he even knows this, called him a hateful racist.
100%, so, yeah.
She's, you know, if you ask her right now, she'll say she didn't say it.
So yeah, she didn't say it. Or
she's counter, you know, if she's saying, if she's lying about what she said herself, which she's on record saying, of course she's going to lie. And Steve Miller and Scavino, come on. Now.
Exactly, yeah. So look, they both deny that it happened. Okay, so now we have to weigh the evidence. First, I mean, the fact that it's entirely consistent with everything that we've experienced would seem to indicate that it's true, but you can't go through your life assuming that. So we're going to go through the actual evidence. So the Atlantic had four different sources on that story. Now, they were anonymous, that's true, which if you don't like the story slash are conservative means that it didn't happen, they're just being made up. That's not actually how it works. And by the way, just to clarify, they're not anonymous to the reporter. The reporter knows who they are. They're just being anonymous. Now, in this case, should they be? We'll return to that later on. But they say that they would be attacked if they were to openly come out and talk about this, which is not necessarily a good reason to not come forth, but also definitely true. So here's the thing, they immediately started attacking the story. So in addition to the four sources that the Atlantic has, James LaPorta, who's an AP investigative reporter and a former Marine himself, tweeted, "A senior Defense Department official I just spoke with confirmed this story by Jeffrey Goldberg in its entirety, especially the graphs about the late Senator John McCain and former Marine General John Kelly, President Trump's former chief of staff." Later on, he added on a second source, specifically a senior US Marine Corps officer with knowledge of President Real Donald Trump's comments confirmed the Atlantic story. So that is additional multiple sources from a different outlet. But it wasn't just the AP and the Atlantic, because eventually the Washington Post got involved as well and said, "A former senior administration official who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to speak candidly, confirmed to the Washington Post that the president frequently made disparaging comments about veterans and soldiers missing in action, referring to them at times as losers." So that's a third outlet. But the interesting thing about the Washington Post adding on additional sources is that they also added on additional information. In one account, the president told senior advisors that he didn't understand why the US government placed such value on finding soldiers missing in action because they had performed poorly and gotten caught and deserved what they got, according to a person familiar with the discussion. Trump believed, this is enough, that's insane. But we've got another one. Trump believed people who served in the Vietnam War must be losers because they hadn't gotten out of it, according to a person familiar with the comments. And clearly, Trump will feel that way because he did get out of it, pretending he had bone spurs. So clearly, anyone who didn't make up bone spurs and use their wealth to get out of serving their country must be a loser. But man, why do we search for our soldiers missing in action because they suck at their job? That should end it. It won't. It won't have any effect whatsoever. But just the fact that they denied the Atlantic story now is causing all of this additional information to come out, which makes it look even worse. I would argue that's worse than the World War I thing.
It's all the same. And this goes back to him attacking the father of a soldier who died while he was running for president the first time. Like, we've seen it, and his definition of a loser is, I would like to ask him a question, have him define what he means by that. There's a lot. So the loser aspect, they're losers because what? Like, what did it take for you to get out of the war? It took your dad owning a building that had a doctor in it. So why didn't everybody just do that? That's how he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it boggles my mind because so many of his own supporters are fall into that category of what he would define as losers. Why do they like him? I don't understand, especially when stuff like this comes out. They are relying on Fox News to say this is false, when in reality, the things that we have him on tape saying, and for so long, and his tweet about John McCain is the same sentiment. And that was something that we can find right now and bring out for you. I don't understand.
I'm gonna.
And is he, oh great, because, and is he actively trying to keep soldiers from becoming these losers? No, he doesn't want to. He had the opportunity to end our involvement in Yemen, and he didn't. He vetoed bipartisan legislation to do that. So he's not that guy they think he is. The only thing, it is mind control. It is him, just because he doesn't blink, and it's because he's pathological. He doesn't care. He's a sociopath. And he does not actually care about other people, not even a little bit, to the point where you can read it on his face that he's lying.
Yeah, exactly. I want to go through a little bit more of the evidence, because we have additional confirmation. That's one sort of evidence. We also have all of the experience of, ooh, we've got a hype train coming, nice. All of the experience of what we've seen over the past few years that is not coming from anonymous sources, that is all right out there. So in terms of the language, would he speak this way? You might recall that it's now deleted, but he had once tweeted, I would like to extend my best wishes to all, even the haters and losers, on this special date, September 11th. You know, that's not necessarily about veterans specifically, but you get that he doesn't necessarily hold a lot of, like, the ability to venerate things or like feel humbled by the weight of history. So
decency,
what else do we have?
As well, like, humble. That's decency, not it. It's well, decency, the ability to revere anything other than himself.
Yeah. And in terms of his other comments and opinions and thoughts about the military, so he said visiting troops in combat zones is not overly necessary. A former senior White House official told the Washington Post that Trump is afraid of those situations. He's afraid people would want to kill him. So he doesn't think that we need to honor them by going. These aren't the dead vets. These are going to actually visit them. So he's done it incredibly sparingly as president. So you had the incredibly public feud with John McCain, with him openly saying, I like people who weren't captured. That is effectively the same as all of this Atlantic stuff. And he did it in public, and they didn't care about that either. Then when John McCain died in August 2018, Trump told his senior staff, according to three sources with direct knowledge of this event, we're not going to support that loser's funeral. And he became furious when he saw flags lowered to half staff. What the F are we doing that for? Guy was an effing loser. This feud was entirely out in the open. We might have some new details from the Atlantic story, but we saw all of this operating. And even way after John McCain had died, he continues to make unnecessary digs at him, including, and this is a great one from Daniel Dale, and really the stolen valor here is amazing. Trump's specific argument against John McCain on veterans issues, McCain, Trump has said, failed to get veterans choice passed, while he, Trump, did get it passed. It was John McCain's initiative signed into law in 2014. He says McCain failed on this, I succeeded, when it was passed before he was president, and it was John McCain's bill, which is just amazing. Just amazing. So we got more, but feel free. What's going on?
What does he think the Veterans Choice Bill is?
Yes, no idea.
What is this thing that he thinks he passed into law that was literally John McCain's bill? I don't know. This needs to be a big story for a very, very 60-day long time.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing is, we have other, like, his attempt to pretend that he has empathy. Do you remember Maisha Johnson? The widow of one of our soldiers lost abroad. Trump called her to make her feel better, I guess. That was the idea. Didn't happen. Since Trump, according to her, couldn't remember my husband's name. And he also said to her that LeDavid, her the lost soldier, quote, knew what he had signed up for. And so you might think, well, that's according to her. That's what happened on the call. But the thing is, Trump's feud with the widow of a fallen soldier didn't stay on the phone call. He continued it in public, tweeting, "I had a very respectful conversation with the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson and spoke his name from beginning without hesitation, calling her a liar." Because he hadn't done enough damage to her in the private call, he had to take it public. And she was, of course, incredibly harassed after that. Brett already referred to the feud he had with Kaiser Khan. So following a critical speech by Kaiser Khan, whose son, Captain Humayun Khan, was killed during the Iraq War back in 2004, Trump said, "If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say," which was, I'm assuming, was an incredibly Islamophobic attack against these two parents that had lost their kid. The mother said that she didn't trust herself to speak at this event because despite the fact that her son had fallen so many years before, having to talk about this, knowing that Trump might become the commander in chief, would have caused her to break down, so she chose not to speak. But he mocked them in that way publicly. And I just got one more. So in terms of sacrifice and what makes you a loser, a sucker, what sorts of sacrifices are worth it? Trump also took on Khan's criticism about sacrifices, saying he had made, quote, a lot of sacrifices. Pressed by George Stephanopoulos of examples of those, he said he had created thousands and thousands of jobs and built great structures, which George Stephanopoulos noted and many other people did, is not an example of sacrifices, but also not out of the ordinary for his family, because Don Jr., talking about his trip to Arlington National Cemetery, said he got emotional about the sacrifices those soldiers had committed and said that he too had committed sacrifices, voluntarily giving up a huge chunk of their business and their international deals. It was a big sacrifice, costing us millions and millions of dollars. So this whole family is sick. It's rotten to its core. Maybe Don Jr. has the capacity for some sort of empathy, but it has been trained out of him by his father. And everything about this reporting from the Atlantic, Trump has been trying to convince us that this is how he views the troops for literally years. The idea that we would reject it now makes absolutely no sense.
It's very obvious all the things that are happening. How do we communicate this to, like, Trump supporters? Does it matter to them? Like, things they believe to be true. I believe that they think this is true, that Donald Trump is a great leader of their side, who, when he says he makes sacrifices, they believe it. Like, no, all of it is, you say it's a sacrifice, but it's an investment. It's an investment in your company. Oh, my sacrifice to give up portions of it. What portions? Show me. And then also, like, so you're telling me that your overall brand, in your opinion, when you entered into this, your overall brand for the Trump administration, and it will be hurt by you and your dad becoming president of the United States and first bastard. Like, is that it? You honestly want people to believe that that is a sacrifice? It isn't. And building great structures, like this, the result is a building. How is that a sacrifice?
That's
the core of your business. No, you just want people to think it's a sacrifice, because all you do is lie to people all day, every day. And I just don't think they can lie about this. And I think we need to think about it as like bursting people's bubbles. Find out where that information bubble is of people that you know, and just get this in front of them, this article and all the supporting materials. Just burst their bubble, because that's what they're living in. And the right has invested so much money in completely walling off information from their supporters. And we need to like drop pamphlets into their East Germany.
That's good. That's more historical knowledge than Trump has about what happened during that time. The sources so far on the Atlantic's article about Trump calling dead soldiers suckers and losers, so far it is anonymous. It's coming from multiple different sources to multiple different outlets, confirmed by multiple different journalists who have had good records their entire career. But should they come forward? So here's a little bit of Brian Stelter making the case for why they should.
This, Don, normally the denials from the president and his aides would carry some weight. But for 3.5 years, the White House has squandered its credibility to the point where its words are essentially worthless and the denials mean very little. Jeffrey Goldberg is the top editor of The Atlantic, one of the most respected journalists in Washington. He has sources at high levels who've been confiding in him for years. So this has to be taken seriously, as your panel just said, and other outlets are starting to match this. I think, Don, we have to keep, you know, the White House's credibility in mind when we cover this, but it is also incumbent on the sources, on the people that are talking to Goldberg, on the people that are talking to other outlets. The president's denying it explicitly. So it's put up or shut up time. It is September 3rd. The election is in 2 months. What are these figures doing where they are insisting on anonymity when we know so many people have already left the government? There are so many former Trump officials who are no longer in government.
So Brett, should they come forward? Would coming forward make a difference? But first, should they? Is there some sort of obligation to?
So right now, you're framing it in a way that I think is unnecessary.
What's that?
Well, right now you're saying, like, you're opening up the framing for it, and so is Stelter, that if they don't, it somehow undercuts the credibility of the story.
You're right.
And it's fine, and I get that that's why you're asking it and all that stuff. But so no, they don't have to. They don't have to. This is how journalism works. And so many, and this is also how Trump journalism works, because Trump's favorite anonymous source is a lot of people. And I want to find, I'm going to search through the Social Security records to find if there was ever someone born named Lotta People, because that must be it. Otherwise, he's just also pulling anonymous sources out of his ass. And that's it.
Yeah. I think you're right. Even bringing it up is sort of implying that it is not 100% credible when, look, those sources could be verified sources that in this case lied, I guess. Multiple people could have done that, I suppose. I would argue it doesn't matter because what he has said publicly should have done all of the work that this new story hypothetically could accomplish. I will say, though, anonymous sources are not obligated to come forward. There are reasons, especially in America, to not want to come forward publicly. His base is insane. They're out of their minds, and some of them are violent. But I would also say it wouldn't matter. Like, if all four of those sources came forward and they were, you know, five-star generals and served under multiple presidents, like, what's gonna happen? Is Tucker gonna say, oh, well, in that case,
No, they're absolutely not. I absolutely agree. They're calling Joe Biden a radical. Okay, so that ship has sailed. And then also, there was a letter that came out from 150 or 71, I forget, some one of those numbers of generals and high-ranking officials who said Donald Trump is terrible. Mm-hmm. He has a huge disapproval rating among the military.
Yeah,
they feel it. They know it. They don't support him. And so also, how else are you gonna get information like this? As soon as those names come out, then those people, and I believe due to my faith in journalism, that and also cross-referencing against what you said, where like it shouldn't matter. This is in the stuff that's already out there is damning. This is just a reminder of that. If we get rid of all the decent if we out the decent human beings in the Trump administration, then we remove the ability of those decent human beings to report on the indecency happening within the Trump administration.
Yeah. Yeah, but the only thing I would add is let's acknowledge that decency in this case might not necessarily mean would pursue policy or regulation outcomes that we would agree with. It might just be reports on horrendous quotes that are said. But yeah, maybe. And look, I think these quotes are pretty bad. I mean, it's not quite as effective as some, the McCain comment from 2016 or the, grab them by the, all of that, because that was actually on tape. You could hear it. But Biden already has an ad up with these quotes. And when you start to mash them up with some of the things he's actually said, it could be effective for some people. I just question how much. Like, I don't, at the end of the day, believe that, Kayleigh McEnany is doing her job, I guess, but that all the rest don't really believe it. They might say that, but what's the difference whether they believe it or not when they wouldn't care if they knew it was true? If an audio tape came out of Trump saying it, there, what defections would there be? What would it actually change? And I just, at this point, I don't see why it would change anything.
If you want my hard, cynical analysis of this, it is just, You got to get the margins. You're chipping away at the margins.
Yeah, maybe.
Do ad buys among older voters in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, and you just don't stop. You get, I mean, that's what swift voting was. Unfortunately, that was all BS, and this is actually based on stuff that we have. But if you can get a false message to resonate and give people pause, you can get a true message to resonate and make people realize what a monster this is.
Maybe.
And then also, I mean, the rest of that heart, the cynical part of it is like, and then add that, you know, Biden is a better communicator than Hillary Clinton in terms of something that is the core of this argument, which is empathy and decency. He's a better communicator than Clinton was with that. Plus, the extremely cynical part, he's a guy who's white. So that can get through, I think, just a base, raising the base level given how America tends to be since, you know, the 1400s.
Exactly. Yeah. Since the multiple fatal shootings in Kenosha, we've been worried about possible copycats, especially considering that the right hasn't really done much to denounce that domestic terrorist. It has instead implied that people who go to other states with firearms, whether illegally obtained or not, to defend someone else's property and possibly get into self-defense situations is kind of a heroic thing. And we apparently narrowly avoided a potential copycat incident like that. So on Tuesday, the Kenosha Police Department advised the FBI that a law enforcement agency in Iowa had received a tip that suspects Michael Carmo and an unidentified male later identified as Cody Smith were in possession of firearms and traveling from Missouri to Kenosha to loot and quote, possibly pick people off. A news release says that the two, Carmo and Smith, told agents they quote, wanted to see proof of the rioting and were planning to drive to Portland, Oregon next, saying they were willing to quote, take action if police were defunded. I think we know what they mean there, and they certainly were armed for it. FBI agents recovered an Armory AR-15 assault rifle, a Mossberg 500 AB 12 gauge shotgun, two handguns, a silencer, ammunition, body armor, a drone, and other materials. So we have more information about them, but they were going to be heavily armed, specifically going there after telling people that they were looking to loot, pick people off, and take action if the police wouldn't.
That's so weird that they would say, like, we're gonna find these rioters, see if they're rioting, then we're gonna loot. So like, what is the division there?
They're like, bad at the looters and they wanna do it.
You would become a looter. So maybe we wanna confirm that there's looting happening, so we'll loot and then we'll shoot everybody. But like, okay, the decent, take a step back, look at this. Donald Trump has told these people to go do this. Like, Donald Trump, by saying that he supports the shooter in Kenosha, has said, yeah, everybody else do this.
Yeah.
That is the green light that he has given. And really, to sum it up, like, Donald Trump has essentially said before, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue, shoot people and get away with it. His new message is, yeah, take some guns, go down to Fifth Avenue and shoot people. I'll let you get away with it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And to give you just a little bit more information about these individuals and help us to assess how likely actual violence was, Carmo reportedly told agents that he and Smith had been roommates in Missouri for about 4 weeks, that they worked together and are part of an organization called the 417 Second Amendment Militia. Carmo reportedly said the two decided to travel to Kenosha to see for themselves. Now, in terms of prior crimes, because, you know, I know that in America, technically, you're only supposed to dig into the past of people who have been fatally shot by the police, but we're gonna do it in this case with the militia members as well. Carmo has prior convictions, including for burglary, possession of a controlled substance, receiving stolen property, and evading a law enforcement officer resulting in injury or death. Smith has a prior misdemeanor domestic battery conviction in California and acknowledged regular drug use. As a result, both Carmo and Smith were prohibited from possessing firearms and ammunition. As a result of that, they're facing multiple charges that in theory could land them in jail for years or possibly decades with fines of about $250,000 or more. Who knows if it'll come to that? I don't know how much evidence the FBI and the ATF have. They're apparently working on this, but it certainly looks like they were going there to commit some crimes. You don't generally, like, I need to bring my AR-15 for self-defense, better bring a silencer. I don't know if that generally makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. They also said they were going to do it.
To pick people off.
They were going to take action.
Yeah. Yeah, and the pick people off is even more explicit.
The tip said that they were going to possibly pick people off. So I don't know if they said that, but it says like they were going to take action if police were defunded. They're going to do these terrible things. So Joe Biden has condemned this kind of behavior. Donald Trump has not. He's done the opposite. He's emboldened it and told people to actually go do it. So pick your president. Pick your president. And the defunding the police thing is ridiculous. Like if they were defunded, they then these guys don't even believe in that. Let's all. We all need to stop this. Now, I'm also going to say, does this represent all people who are voting for Donald Trump? No, the same way I don't believe that all the people, anyone who is lighting things on fire and shooting in the streets, I don't think they're representative of most people in America. And not even most of the protesters. Like the protests that have happened are wildly peaceful, largely peaceful. Mm-hmm. You have photos of from drones of entire streets filled with people in the middle of the day, just having exercising their First Amendment rights. Of course, this doesn't represent the vast majority of people. But what Trump wants to do is cherry pick who represents most people. And this he won't ever allow to represent his folks, but he's still not going to give ground on whether they're right or wrong. But he still wants to vilify everybody who thinks that Black Lives Matter and say that they're all rioters and looters when that is just absolutely provably not the case.
Yeah. And so, you know, good on whoever initiated the process of these two getting caught. I mean, it obviously involved the FBI, some local Iowa law enforcement and the Kenosha Police Department. See, sometimes they do good things and we can acknowledge that. I don't know exactly who. It's possible that another member of that gang that they were a part of might have spoken to someone. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out more. But yeah, these were caught. These two people. It is as simple as going and buying an assault rifle and a shotgun and driving to one of these cities if that's what you want to do. So cross your fingers that they catch all of them. I mean, one already got through and he was operating illegally. But that's what we're hoping for, is that all of these people who are being radicalized and sent out, not you know, by these dark internet forums, but by watching Tucker Carlson and other Fox News shows, we're just hoping that all of the gang members that are being radicalized by that will be caught. We are now 6 months into the pandemic and lockdowns of a variety of sorts. I don't know exactly where you're living, what the state of that might be. LA had locked down really hard and then opened up and we're fairly locked down again. I don't know when that's gonna change, but I know that we're all wondering. And I'm in my own bubble. The bubble is this big empty building, but I saw a poll recently about what America at large thinks about the pandemic and when things are going to get back to normal. And I found it fascinating. So when polled on how long it'll take, about 2% believe it'll be either less than 2 weeks or up to a month. So effectively nobody believes that by October will be done. 15% think it'll take 2 to 3 months. 44% think it'll take at least 6 months. And 27% of the public thinks things will never get back to normal. Brett, what do you think about that?
So I love reading polls. The 2 to 3 months is made up probably of a lot of people who are Trump supporters who think that as soon as Biden wins, everyone's going to completely flip around and be like, yo, 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 it's over now. We finally fixed it, like immediately. So that's why that has a bump. The 6 months or more, I think, is the most like it exists because people are, and this is just me speculating, but like people saying it's been 6 months. I have no idea how long that feels like even. So I'm sure it'll happen for a while. And add to that people who are saying things like, well, I hear that's about maybe when we won't for the next 6 months have a vaccine or any way to really combat it. So something like this will continue. But the 27% that say it's never gonna get back to normal, like I get that. Because a long 6 months or more might as well be forever. Plus, I just a lot of things that the black swan events, essentially the seismic shifts as a result of some random thing happening to the world. It won't ever get back to normal. There are many ways to interpret that that mean it will never get back to normal. Will you ever feel safe going out in a crowd again? Like I'm watching shows that were filmed in the past and people are hugging each other and they're like at sporting events. I'm watching the playoffs and I'm like, I would never want to go be in one of those places again because I just don't want to get it and I don't want to contribute to spreading it. So there are many ways to look at this. And they all kind of make sense.
Yeah, I feel some of that too. And it's the most stereotypical thing. But yeah, watching old shows at how carefree we were was weird. But look, I think the people who say six months or more are being, I think, realistic. I think that that's a realistic estimate, but I think things will get back to normal. We will remember this. How could we not? A year of our life effectively being taken away in large part. We'll remember, we'll do our best to try to explain to younger generations who hopefully won't experience this, depending on how things go. But I think that things will get back to normal. I think that at some point we're gonna have big crowds. At some point people are gonna be walking around the mall. At some point I'm gonna be at Gen Con again. I have to imagine that at some point, like think about how much has been normalized in the last 6 months. 6 months of relative peace of coronavirus not being a big issue, and eventually it won't be. I think that that can become normalized again. I have to assume that. I have to assume that at some point we'll be in movie theaters and there will be stores. I don't know. Does that seem crazy? I feel like it's gotta happen.
Well, I think the longer something like this occurs, the more of an opportunity the replacement industries and supply chain elements have an opportunity to entrench themselves. So it'll be a longer amount of time that those shifts can be in place. That like, what are you gonna do if you're a mom and pop shop that had to close? And there are many mom and pop shops that have to close. In the meantime, the folks who don't want to leave their house to go even support that and who are losing their ability to pay the slightly higher price for acting local, as it were. Like in the meantime, Amazon's able to make those remote distribution, like non brick and mortar solutions, a way of life that people who hadn't maybe tried them before now have to learn how to try them.
Maybe
realize it's that convenient, etc.
Yeah, maybe invest accordingly. Anyway, but not today. Things are really chaotic. It is the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so garbage people of the week time. I forgot this time to ask Brett who is gonna go first, so I'm gonna go first. You know what? I think that that's probably how Skip is thinking about this. So my garbage person, look, there's a lot, and there's a very good case to be made that Donald Trump should be the garbage person for his comments about our vets, but we already talked about that. So I'm gonna bring up a new one. It is a person who should have been in here basically every week for the past few months, and that is Marjorie Taylor Greene, if you can see. But why? That's why, because she posted that image on her Facebook account. And that image of her posing with a gun against three congresswomen is bad enough. The idea that she's their worst nightmare because she has a rifle is made worse by the caption. So here's what she wrote next to that. Hate America leftists want to take this country down. Politicians have failed this country. I'm tired of seeing weak establishment Republicans play defense. Our country is on the line. America needs fighters who speak the truth. We need strong conservative Christians to go on the offense against these socialists who want to rip our country apart. America must take our country back. Save America, stop socialism, defeat the Democrats. And it says at the bottom, Marjorie C. Less, but it doesn't work because I kept clicking it and she still wouldn't go away. So there, I'm gonna put her in the trash while we continue. Definitely belongs there for the implied threat of violence. Not necessarily from her, but implying that good Christians need to go on the offense against her. I also love that they have had the presidency, they have the Senate, they have the Supreme Court, but it will never be enough. They still always need to take their country back, even though they have virtually all of the power over it. Isn't that weird how that works out? But yeah, her posing next to these three congresswomen and implying that they've stolen America and we need to take the offense against them in a time when Trump supporters are already committing acts of violence in cities around the country. That's just about as irresponsible a thing as I can imagine for someone who wants to be their colleague in the House and very likely will in just a few months.
She's a militant. She's an armed militant extremist.
Yeah.
Fact. You can't do, like, I get it. It looks stupid. It looks like a porno cover. Like, it looks dumb. She sucks. She's a crazy QAnon conspiracy theorist.
Yep.
Who gets her, you know, she's gonna make laws, but she, right now she gets most of her legal advice from memes.
Yep.
Right? Like, oh God, like, there will be no serifs on the bills she gives in. I wonder if they're gonna change the format necessary to just be like, you have to have 5G somewhere in the bill. Is that who the next round of extremist militant Trump supporters are? We have to beat Trump. We have to run up the score. We have to run them out of town at the ballot box.
So 100%.
Vote early. Vote.
Vote early.
Vote as much as you can, as effectively as you can. Not as much as you can, but as many of you need to vote as possible. And you need to vote effectively.
Yeah, and look, I also want to give a little bit more information because we haven't talked about her all that much on the show. But lurking behind and implying to me the even more than just the imagery, the threat of violence. In June, Politico uncovered hours of video in which Green expressed racist, Islamophobic, and anti-Semitic views, including one video in which she said that Muslims do not belong in government, which is, that's just putting it out there. Notably, if you don't know, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are both Muslim. Green said that the 2018 midterms, in which a diverse set of candidates won elections, was part of an Islamic invasion of our government. She also said anyone that is a Muslim that believes in Sharia law does not belong in government. And she has promoted the fringe QAnon conspiracy theory multiple times, including once calling Q, who's totally an individual, the so-called leader of the movement, a patriot. So in 2018, those congresswomen that she put up there invaded our government. It's an Islamic invasion of our government. And they're not legitimate. They don't belong there. So now conservatives need to take the offense against them. And oh, whoops, I'm holding an AR-15. Isn't it weird how that works out?
I love the concept of garbage. Of a crazy invasion, you would say. It's illegal, it's a hostile invasion. And the way that she wants to get a similar job is also to be voted in. Like, how do you invade? You asked people and they said, yeah, you.
Yeah. Can't believe that multiple QAnon supporters are gonna be voting on laws and calling witnesses, and they're gonna have time to ask questions of people who come before our government. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is gonna be asking about lizard people and stuff like that.
They're gonna get in there, John. And when they get in there, they're probably gonna have access to some stuff that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that Q does not exist and everything they're saying is absolute horse hockey. Do you think they'll have a time when they, do you think there'll be a time when they're like, never mind? Because there's a difference between them and Trump. Like, Trump is not a true believer. Trump takes advantage of true believers. And I think that there's gonna be some of these QAnon folk who just like believe that this is absolutely true, right?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
We've gotta feed the monster box.
Does the monster box eat garbage?
Eats garbage, or she, they eat garbage.
Garbage.
And we are, it's Officer Teensy Peepee. Officer Teensy Peepee. Oh, I guess I'll wait until the end. Stay hungry, stay alive, no matter what occurs. Okay, so Officer Teensy Peepee is an officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who was trying to get a woman who seems to be a reporter to leave after curfew. And he starts asking her nicely and she nicely responds until he starts to be more of a jerk. And it seems like he arrests her when she says he might have a small penis. Enjoy.
I'm gonna ask you one more time, pick up your stuff and
no, what I'm telling you is that you just got arrested last night and you're put us in a difficult position every time. Just don't be out here at the curfew. We don't want to deal with it.
Goodbye.
There's nothing to report anyway.
There's nothing. That's what we were trying to show her.
Well, how long does it take? What is it?
There's been nobody out here for a couple hours.
Short amount of time.
Great, but so we after curfew,
and then that's it.
Like
from 6 o'clock on, there's been nobody here.
Ma'am, keep walking.
I'm going 397. I'm walking. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I'm walking. You don't need to touch me.
Goodbye.
I'm walking. You don't need to touch me. At this point, you're just showing all of us how little you is. I'm out.
You're under arrest.
For what?
Disorderly conduct and curfew.
I'm not. You've got four. Don't touch me. I haven't done anything.
She's under arrest.
For what? For what? I haven't done anything. I'm not doing anything. You literally, he's like waiting for this.
Calm down, okay?
John, that she was a big shout out to Trashy Plays for suggesting that. On Sunday nights, I go on Twitch for the most part, and you can send it. You know, we discuss what we should cover on that following Monday's show. So, guys, we'll do that on Sunday nights at Twitch. So you go on there when you see, get notifications, become a subscriber, at least follow, and you'll get to know all that stuff. But Trashy was like this, and he was right. This is
that's a good one.
This is Prince Teensy, Officer Teensy Peepee of the Kenosha PPD, and amazing. I love it so much because it is exactly what you would assume would happen. Like, she's out there, and they're talking about how they are. She has a press badge on. She is trying. She's covering all this stuff. She's obviously, there's no one around, and there's an extra little level of this where she is proving that, like, Kenosha's not always on fire. Like, it is after curfew, and the main area that she's in is totally peaceful, and there's no one around. And we need people to kind of show that that is the case, because actively the other side is trying to paint Kenosha, Portland, and other cities as these lawless dens of anarchy and terror, when really they're not. Like, the head of the Portland Fire Department came out and was like, "We're not ablaze. Everybody calm down."
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and that's necessary because, you know, where a lot of America is getting their news about this is like Tucker Carlson. It's literally, I think it was Parker Malloy that identified, they spend hours playing footage of fires. And if they don't have new footage, which in a lot of these cases they don't, they use, like, Tucker Carlson last night was playing video of a fire from May 30th, months ago. But if you're just tuning in, you're like, "Oh my God, it's on fire. They're talking about Portland. They're talking about Chicago. They're talking about Kenosha. I guess it must be on fire." And so, yeah, they're totally manipulating it. And look, we laugh about this interaction because, hey, look, it's the cop who got, you know, sensitive about his penis and all that. But this is also a cop who feels, and might well be correct to feel, that he can arrest reporters for any reason he wants, including them just saying something, knowing that they're filming him and apparently not caring, because cops seem to have become totally immunized against concern about their actions being shown. He believed, if you don't respect my authority, I can arrest you. And this is a time in our country where we have to decide whether that's true or not. Do you get to tell a cop that they have a small or don't you? And if you do, can they arrest you? Can they brutalize you? Can they kill you? This is all being played out on the streets of America, not necessarily all simultaneously, but we really do have to decide what the relationship between the cops and the people they're supposed to be protecting and serving is going to be. Can they drive through us? Can they beat us? Can they tase us? Can they arrest us for talking about their genitals? These are important questions for America to consider as we go into the next 4 years.
Yep, and so in keeping with that, feeding the monster box, Prince Teensy Peepee.
Unfortunately, with this cop, it was but a small meal. An amuse-bouche, really. Anyway, okay,
an
so.
Amuse-douche. I'm just gonna go.
Okay. You know what? That's how we should start one of our shows, is with a quick an amuse-douche. Usually like an anti-masker. We're gonna do that now, actually. I like that. Okay, so what about the community though? This is just Brett and me, okay? And as with on game night last night, we found out that the audience can and will often overrule us. So what is the Dragon Squad garbage person of the week? Let's see how the voting went. Okay, so it looks like we've got, with 4.7 thousand votes, the winner with 48% of the vote, a relatively close one, is Trump's COVID-19 advisor, Scott Atlas, for pushing a herd immunity strategy that would kill hundreds of thousands, if not a couple of million people. At 34% and coming in second, the fundraising site GiveSendGo for raising money for Kyle Rittenhouse. Geez. 7% of the vote, you have Laura Ingraham for acting as Trump's bumper in their interview, protecting him from some of his comments. At 6%, you have Steve Scalise for sharing a doctored video of the Medicare for All activist, Andy Barkin. And at 4% of the vote, you've got whoever's running Herman Cain's Twitter account. Those are all great choices, but Trump, his advisor, has taken away. Good selection there, Dragon Squad. Appreciate that. Can't forget that they are pursuing that. They're still doing that. Everything that we said today is true and awful, but they are still just trying to let the virus spread unchecked across America.
So this guy, Scott Atlas, he's from the Hoover Institute, which I worked at for a summer.
Really?
Hoover Institution. It's at Stanford. It's a
I didn't know that.
It is the worst bastion. Like, Stanford has one president, and it was Herbert Hoover, who sent America into the Great Depression. And the Hoover Institute is essentially like all the conservative thinkers you could imagine get together and find ways to give the president ultimate authority. I work for this guy named Terry Moe, who's an expert on, like, I didn't know this. I was like, I need a job to pay so I could do a play this summer. So like, I got paid to do research and stuff. And I was researching teachers unions. And this guy's goal was to get rid of teachers unions, get teachers not to get paid for anything, and start charter schools across America nonstop, no holds barred. And that's what they get paid to do. This guy, Scott Atlas, is not an epidemiologist. He's like a neuroradiologist or something like that. He looks at x-rays of the brain. He does not know anything about how diseases are spread outside of what any pediatrician might know, and probably less at this point. At the Hoover Institute, their job is to give presidents ultimate power over anyone. Congress, the judiciary, no. The high power of the executive is their goal. And Scott Atlas has been plucked from them to be an MD when really he has no clue what he's talking about.
Yeah, 100%. And a great choice there. Good job, audience. And with that, Brett, appreciate you joining us, closing out the week. And everyone should know, next week, we don't have a show Monday because, you know, it's holiday and everything. Tuesday through Friday, we will have shows. I'm going to be off recuperating a little bit, but we are going to have awesome guest hosts and co-hosts. Brett is going to be holding down the Friday show, and Brett is going to be joined by, I believe the idea is Ben Dixon.
Oh,
I'm not sure if that's been confirmed, but that's the idea. But you're going to have Anna and Francesca and Adrian and JR and Emma and Michael and a whole bunch of awesome people are going to be doing the show. So it should be a lot of fun. Arguably better than usual, but don't tell me if that ends up being the case. All of that said, Brett, thank you for joining us. We're going to be doing Common Room together later on tonight, right?
Apple's Room.
Couples Room. Brett and I and our awesome wives are going to be doing an episode of Common Room. So definitely go follow at twitch.tv/TYT and you'll get a notification about that. Brett, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Protests continue in cities across America, a constant reminder not just of a number of cases of extreme injustice that have led to those protests, but also that for the most part, there has been very little actually done to respond to the concerns of so many Americans about police brutality, inequities in the criminal justice system, and more. And we have a guest joining us now whose family has directly experienced one of these events. We're joined now by Kimberly Ambler-Jones. Kimberly, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So Kimberly, your brother Javier was killed by police in front of live PD cameras back in March of 2019. We spoke about this case a few months ago on the show. I know that it's been more than a year now that you've been working for some kind of justice in this case. What's happened since that terrible incident back in March of last year?
Well, it's been more than a year that we've been working for justice, but it's only been 3 months, almost 3 months, that we've actually known exactly what happened. My brother passed away March 28th, 2019. We didn't know for 15 months exactly what happened to him, how he died. We just were told that he died in police custody, but there was no detail given. The more we kept asking, the least information we were getting, just more runaround, telling us to call this number, find out. We couldn't even find out what county, because I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with Austin, but it's separated into two separate counties, has Williamson County, Travis County. We didn't know what county he was in. Actually, at the time of his passing, we weren't able to go view his body. My mom tried to go and, you know, see him. We didn't get to see him until before his funeral, like literally the day before we had his funeral. So it's been hard. I mean, it was hard before, but since the tape was been released and the world finally got to see what happened, it's been just like reliving that moment all over again, but even worse to see you know, somebody so close to me experience that much hate towards them, and not, it wasn't deserved. So it's been a really hard experience for me and my family both.
I mean, no matter what had happened afterward, it's unthinkable, but the idea that they would drag out the grieving process by hiding so much information, I can't understand what possible excuse they could have for that. Not only wouldn't give you basic information about what happened, along what timeline, where, but that they knew that there was direct video evidence of it available. How could you possibly be so cruel and inhuman? And I don't know what can be done to compensate the family for, you know, that horrible situation, but I certainly do hope that now that that information has gotten out, that people have more information about it, that something is going to happen. What are your expectations for the future when it comes to this? I know that you're involved in an organization that's been holding events to try to raise awareness about the situation and push for something. What's the hope for the future?
Well, the hope is, because like people always ask me, like, when you say you want justice, what exactly does that mean? I feel like this is happening way too often in America. And in my brother's case, his is a little bit different because, like I said, they try to hide it. They were hoping that it would just get swept under the rug and that nobody was going to look further into it. And we were just going to be done and over with. And they're going to continue on doing what they've been doing this whole time. Well, my whole thing is to bring awareness to it because I want them to know, like I want everybody to know, like this is what we're dealing with in our own community, in our own backyard. There's still people that live in Austin, Williamson County that have no clue that this is what happened. And the deputies that took my brother's life, they work for a sheriff, which the sheriff, I feel like he's just as responsible as they are. And there's been a lot of news articles coming out lately about the different things that have happened while he's been sheriff for Williamson County that are just now coming out. And people need to understand that a sheriff's position is an elected position. Mm-hmm. So you elected this person to look over your county and provide protection for your county. And that's not what they're doing. They're causing chaos and their own little gang. Honestly, that's what it is. They're a menace to society. They're their own little gang. And they're using their power to hurt people, and unfortunately a lot of them is people of color, and take lives, and they feel like they're in a higher position, so they're okay to be able to get away with that, like having qualified immunity, like, oh, we, you know, he didn't pull over when we asked him to pull over. But I feel like what he did didn't require the reaction to take his life for having high beams on. So our goal ultimately is, I want justice for my brother as far as the ones that took his life should be held responsible. And when I say held responsible, just like if I took somebody's life, I would go to jail. That's mm-hmm. where they need to go also. They're no different just because they have a badge that they should be able to take somebody's life. I'm in the healthcare field, and if somebody's reaching out to me telling me that they can't breathe, that they need help, my job is to provide them with that help. And I know all deputies, all law enforcement, they are given the right courses to take a certified CPR course to make sure that they need to do whatever they need to do until the ambulance gets there and emergency response gets there to be able to take over. But as he's calling out for them to help him, they just continue to cause him more harm. So I'm like, so at what point do you believe this person, or did it? Was that not even the thought, like you didn't believe him, or you did believe him, you just didn't care that you were about to kill this man? Like, I don't know what their thought process was, but the goal is I want justice for him. And I just don't want this to keep happening. Like, it keeps happening to people, and we keep seeing every day justice for this person, justice for this person. Until we hold somebody accountable, it's going to keep happening. Once they see, okay, like, hey, we're not getting away with this anymore, then they're going to stop because they're not going to get away with it. They don't want to go to jail. I don't want to go to jail. I know you don't want to go to jail. So I'm going to make sure my actions make it to where I don't end up in prison. So that's what our ultimate goal is. And then we're also just trying to help other people because it's been hard. Like, I feel like we've reached a lot of people with just a small group of people that have been helping me. And mm-hmm. we're nobody. Like, we don't have a big platform or anything like that. And I feel like some stories get more publicity than other stories, which I don't agree with. I feel like these are all human lives. Nobody's life deserves to be taken. No one life is more important than the other. I feel like they all should get the same amount of publicity and the same amount of effort in fighting for justice for that individual. So that's another goal of ours. Like, we want to help people that are dealing with similar situations and use our platform, because we've kind of created one that's a little bit growing and is getting bigger and bigger, to be able to help other people get their stories out there as well. Because I feel like we've all been silent for too long. Mm-hmm. And if we're just going to keep being silent, it's going to keep happening. And I have the children, and I don't want to ever have to deal with what my parents had to deal with. So that's what my ultimate goal is just to keep helping people and to bring awareness to my brother's story and ultimately get justice for his wife being taken.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, like, we have, you know, this huge sustained movement, like the biggest movement of our lives basically going on. And you know, if you look at polls, people seem to be taking it more seriously. They seem to get a little bit of it. But at the same time, you have the police force, the police unions, a lot of politicians that have sort of doubled down and they've never even admitted that a serious conversation needs to be had. You know, that there could be anything that all of these millions of people are saying, this is my experience, here's what I know, here's what needs to be done. They don't even acknowledge that that has to be a conversation that's had. So it's like, it seems like there's reasons to be hopeful and reasons not. But I can't imagine, considering your own personal experience with this, what this time must have been like. For people who are watching this, what can they do? Whether they live in the Austin area or perhaps, you know, they're somewhere else around America, what can they do to help?
Well, to help us specifically, we actually have a website, is justiceforjavierambler.com. And on there, we post all of our events. If anybody's interested in assisting and helping out with our events, they're listed on there. We also have, right now we don't have anything, because we're waiting until the new Travis County DA takes over. Because we were supposed to go to the grand jury in August. Margaret Moore, which was the Travis County, well, she still is currently the Travis County DA until the beginning of the year. She backed out of taking the court, the case to court. So we're waiting until January when the new person steps in position before we could do anything else further in that end of it. But we're doing a mural for my brother. It's going to be in September, actually, very in September. I think we're August though. It's going to be released this month. And we have a GoFundMe right now going for the artist, that all the funds go to him for taking his time and, you know, just wanting to honor us with something that we could remember my brother by. And like a lot of his friends in Austin, you know, I live in a different city. I live like about an hour away from Austin. But he had a lot of people that loved him where we grew up. And then he has a lot of people that loved him in Austin. So we just wanted something special that we could look at and people could just look at and drive by and see who he was. Cause he was an amazing person. Like, his personality was just, I feel like people missed out on getting to meet this genuinely nice teddy bear. He was a big guy and people thought he was intimidating just by looking at him, but he had the biggest heart to go along with his big size. So I feel like so many people have reached out in ways of trying to like, wanting to do something and be there. We're like, go. When we do the unveiling for the mural, come out and support, go donate to the GoFundMe so that we could get the artist what he deserves. Cause he's a talented man from Georgetown, which is from Williamson County. So it made it even more special. He's from the same location and we just want to support him, and his art, just supporting local artists from the community. So that's a good way to help. And, just stay focused on our page. We put all kinds of updates on there to let people know what we're doing and get involved in the movement. And then the most important thing is to make sure you're voting. I mean, I've always been a person to vote. And I just feel like it's something I'm supposed to do. And I can't complain about what's going on in the world if I'm not using my voice. So that's a way to use your voice, is by voting. So I just want everybody to make sure that they're registered to vote. And making sure they're voting. And that's not just at the national level. That includes your local community. I feel like that affects me more than at the national level what's going on. If you don't know who's running your own community, they may not be on the same page of what you're on. You need to make sure the person that is in that position to make your community better sees the same thing that you see, and they want the same change that you want. And if they don't, then you need to do your research or find out who does and step up and get involved. So those are the main things. And just keep sharing. Like, I just want, I've been on Facebook passionately. I've been taking a little bit of a break, just a little mental break for a little bit. But I've just been on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything, just sharing updated information as much as I can. Just trying to get his story out there. I just need the world to know, like, this is what we deal with on a regular basis. And this is what my family has to deal with for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you for joining us. Hopefully our audience can be of some help. A lot of great tips and routes for trying to push for change that you listed there. So, you know, I know that the process is taking forever and it's probably going to take quite a bit longer, but I hope that your family does eventually get justice, because what happened to you should never happen to any family. So Kimberly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I don't know what's going to happen. We just have to be patient. I'm not usually a patient person, but I've always prayed for patience. And I always feel like God tries to tell me, like, I can't provide you with something that I've already given you. So this is my time where now I have to access that patience that I have. So we're okay with it. We're like, delay does not mean that it's going to be denied. Yeah. So we're going to be patient and it's going to happen. So
thank you again.
Thank you. You guys have a good day.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.